The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
Just seems like it was yesterday. Good morning and welcome to the Turley Frequency here on Archangel Radio. 2 hours of fun and faith washed down with good conversation and even better insights. Yes, it's me back again, Kevin Turley, reporting for duty once more on the good ship Archangel, a radio station like no other as it beams truth to worlds as yet unknown and bringing all who listen from this world to the next. Well, that's the hope. Today we're talking the end of the world, talking of hope, or more correctly, the end of the Western world as we know it. That's right, in the next segment we have Dr. Spencer Clavin with us to discuss his very soon-to-be-released book called How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the world around you, stay tuned because we just may have some good news coming your way. Talking of good news, top of the hour, we pray for this world we live in and everyone therein who needs it when we down tools and say the Divine Mercy Chaplet. And you are invited both to pray with us and for us to pray for you. Yes, feel free to text in your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. Lines are open right this minute, so get texting. Story time today is when Joan of Arc, no less, came back from the grave and in the most unexpected place. Our story has its genesis in an insane asylum in Norway. Yes, you heard that right. And you're going to have to tune in to the final segment today to find out if I've lost my mind. Okay, fasten your seatbelts as we get this show on the road. Yes, good morning to you and welcome on board the good ship Archangel with me, your host, Kevin Turley, ably assisted by two captains of the seas, that is Mr. Reed Hodges and Mr. Reich Romano, who do all our wonderful engineering and producing this end. Now, if any time during this show you want to speak to me or call in about anything whatsoever, whether it's our guest, topic of the day, during the prayer time, you can do 888-928-0881. That's right, 888-928-0881. We had the, as you know, the saga of the fixing of the phones just these last weeks, and everything is back up and running. And at any time, you can join the fun on the show on 251-928-2111. Now, I don't know about you, but I woke up this morning and wondered if my radio had tuned to the right station. I don't know if you heard the news overnight about all of this shooting down of UFOs, right? And I really thought I'd tune not to the BBC, but to Coast to Coast AM. Oh, I hear noises. Oh, this is Reed's new sound effect, which I'm wholeheartedly in favor of now. And it indicates to you that we have a caller already on the show. And I mean, I've just literally given out the number, 888-928-0881. Monday morning, somebody has already called in. Reed, who have we got and where are they calling from?
Yes, Kevin, what a coincidence. Someone is calling right when you ask for calls.
Don't do this to me, Reed. Please don't do this to me. You already?
Yep, I'm afraid so.
Okay. Good morning, Michelle. Welcome to the show. Well, it's your show. Welcome to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. How may I help you? What's on your mind?
Kevin, how are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you, Michelle.
How are you? Yesterday afternoon? I'm doing fine. What did you do yesterday afternoon?
What did I do yesterday afternoon? I think I had a lie down. I think I listened to some radio. I can't remember. Why? Was there something happening?
How many times have we gone over the Super Bowl? Remember? We talked about Super Bowl and how you were going to try to watch the Super Bowl. Do you remember that? Do you remember we had that conversation?
I got confused, Michelle, because I thought Super Bowl was, you know, when my wife makes a nice dessert and she passes it around on Sunday lunch afterwards.
No. I'll let the boys take care of you. Reed and Mike, we're going to have to set you straight, okay? Why don't I just get on with what is happening this week for the Turley frequency? How does that sound?
I really wish you would.
Okay. Well, today you have on Spencer Klavan in his wonderful book, How to Save the West. And I think someone needs to save it right now because it looks like we're being invaded by unidentified objects at the moment.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it might even be happening in old England and Ireland, too. Tuesday, we have Mary in the Middle. By a wonderful author, Dorothy Lido Greco, talking about midlife surprises, challenges, and joys of midlife in marriage. And then we have a very special treat with Mariette Rentel, who is, and I want Reed to listen up to this, she is with Catholic Match to talk to us about dating on the 14th of February on Valentine's Day. Don't you think that's a good idea?
Catholic Match,
idea,
right? you can send away for a Catholic spouse, right?
Something like that. Yes, it's good. Good. On Thursday, we have Michael Lichten, and he is editor for Sophia Institute Press to talk about, and he's a real special star. He's been on Coast to Coast. He's been on a lot of different radio shows and come on to talk about all things mystical and his love of beer and coffee. So we are truly fortunate to have him coming on. And then on Thursday, we have author Kelly Flanagan to talk about her brand new book, True Companions. And once again, on Friday, we have a surprise. So what do you have planned for this week, Kevin?
Well, I mean, there's so much there. But, you know, my plan is I just turn up, and whoever turns up, I'm happy to speak to them. Michelle, you know that.
Oh, Kevin. Yes, I do. Oh, and we might have Mr. Murphy from the Center for UFO Studies to come on and actually give kind of a little breakdown of what is floating around in the skies and what people are shooting down. So that might be a good interview, too.
Yeah, I think the way things are going, Michelle, we should have him on speed dial, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Actually, we do, because you know what? It's just getting curiouser and curiouser, is it not?
Well, you would know a lot about shooting things down. I mean, that's kind of what you do in the radio world,
no,
right?
No. Yeah, that's right. I don't know about that. I'm kind and gentle, Kevin. I really am. So
that's funny enough. That's what Mike and Reed said to me as well.
Oh, well, you know what? Reed gets a lot of brownie points for that, so that's good.
So, well, look, it sounds like we've got an absolutely packed week with some really, really interesting guests. I mean, you just don't get this anywhere else, do you, Michelle?
No, I think, you know what? This is Catholic radio done differently, and that's what we
you
like.
You could say that
we
again.
Like going from one world to the next, right? So, searching frontiers yet unknown, spiritually and physically. How does that sound?
Sounds like right up our street, right? Right down our alley.
Okay.
On top of the Archangel Radio building, staring out into the Bay of the Holy Spirit. I mean, you can't do better than that, can you?
You cannot do better than that. Just be aware, Kevin, I am listening at all times.
Oh, I know that.
I remember when we first started this show off, and we were talking about the supernatural, you know, ghouls, witches, things like that. And it's just funny that we're talking about UFOs now, and we're having that kind of occurrence in the Western world.
I'm so glad that interjection went in that direction, Reed. I was a bit worried you were going to reveal some private conversations there. But yes, absolutely. UFOs are everywhere now. I mean, to put it this way, one week we have Bill Murphy on, Michelle, and the next week the New York Times is reporting UFOs right, left, and center. coincidence? I don't think so. Has Michelle been shot down, do you think, Reed?
Nope, we got her.
No, I can still hear Kevin. I can still hear you.
Don't laugh, Reed. Don't laugh. Okay, so that's great, Michelle. Well, listen, right. I better get on with the show, Michelle, you know. And thanks as always for your support and your many notes each day, you know, detailing where we went wrong. Really appreciate it. Keep it up.
All right, good luck this week, guys.
Thank you, Michelle. That was our executive producer, Michelle McAloon, Mrs. Michelle McAloon, and she was reporting in from somewhere out there in the known universe. Oh, my heart sinks when I hear that music.
Off she marches.
Yeah, thank you for that, Reed and Mike. That's really set me up for the day. Listen, if you're out there and you'd like to talk about anything that's happening, I mean, UFOs, crash landing, I mean, shot down, I mean, what's going on in the United States and Canada at the moment? I just don't know. Have I inadvertently come across a sci-fi movie that's come to life? 888-928-0881. Reed, that's good news for you. We have CatholicMatch.com on the show tomorrow.
All right.
So you better get your profile up.
Yeah,
we need to get
Reed a girlfriend.
I'll have to stand on top of a textbook. Just kidding.
Listen, if there's anybody out there somewhere in the Mobile, Fairhope, Southern Alabama area, and you haven't got a date tomorrow night, and secretly you've been listening to this show not for my story time or Mike's brilliant engineering, but because you like the sound of Reed and you happen to be female, why don't you give us a ring and maybe we can set you up on a blind date, 888-928-0881. You wouldn't mind that, would you, Reed? A blind date?
There you go.
I mean, with somebody who's sighted, but, you know, a blind date, you know.
Hopefully, if they're listening to Catholic radio, that'll at least give them something to start the conversation with.
I'm afraid Kristen may be too young.
Kristen may be too young. I mean, you've got nothing against older women, have you, Reed?
I don't.
So, listen, anybody under 80 who's interested in a night out with Reed, call 888-928-0881, and he will even help you in and out of the car. Isn't that right, Reed?
I will.
He's a total gentleman. I mean,
he is.
Mike and I are really surprised that he's not sort of completely inundated, you know, especially working on this show. I mean, it must be the case, Reed, that people come up to you in the street and say, hey, are you, when they hear your voice in the shops or whatever, do you not say, hey, are you Reed off the radio?
Funny enough, I have had somebody ask me that at church, at least. So in some
really?
Sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. See, it's the start of something new. It's the start of something. And now the word's just got to get out to all the young ladies in the parish. And, you know, next thing you know, he'll be taking a date to the 1410 event dinner.
That's right. Listen, Mike and I can vouch for Reed, you know. I mean, he's house trained. He turns up on time. Doesn't snore too loudly during the commercial breaks, you know. I mean, he's a good guy, you know. I think there's potential there. Reed, tell me, what would be your Reed, wake up. Wake up. Reed, are you still awake? Come on.
I'm with you, Kevin.
So, Reed, tell me, what would be your ideal woman? Give me a snapshot. She's listening at the moment, but she's kind of nervous. You know, she thinks, am I good enough for Reed? So reassure her, what sort of woman would really win your heart?
I'm taking notes.
I would like to ask for somebody who is like Mother Mary, but I'm probably not similar to St. Joseph, so that would probably be asking too much.
Well, you got to set your standards high, so there's nothing wrong with setting your standards high.
Yeah, so, I mean, what about somebody who's, like, incredibly wealthy, supermodel looks, you know, has and loves Catholic radio. How about that combination?
That'd be great.
Sounds like a deal. Right. So if you're listening to this and you're a supermodel who just happens to be vacationing down here in Alabama, perhaps, or living down here, and you're also independently wealthy with Mega Millions, and you just happen to love this show, and you wonder how this show can become a greater part of your life, then maybe give us a ring on 888-928-0881, and we'll introduce you to Reed, who's our secret weapon here, you know. I mean, he's going to break many hearts, I'm afraid, before we finish tomorrow. We're going to break many, we're going to make many hearts or many window panes. I don't know which, but we'll be breaking something tomorrow.
One or the other, yep.
We're going to have a special Valentine's Day affair tomorrow, so you got to tune in for that. We're going to set the scene, the right sort of music, the right sort of chocolates, the right sort of flowers, and we've got Reed on offer for anybody who wants them. 888-928-0881. Unfortunately, Mike and I are taken. We're so taken, we're off the shelf and thrown in the rubbish bin. 888-928-0881. But listen, if there's anybody out there who wants to talk about anything else, I mean, maybe Valentine's is just silly and you want to talk about these UFOs being downed and you want to give us your two penneth worth on that, we'd be delighted to hear from you.
Hello.
Oh. Oh, not another phone. Oh, she's not back on the phone again, Reed, is she?
Not Michelle.
Please tell me. Please tell me we've got somebody else on the phone.
I have no idea who it is. I haven't spoken to them yet, but it's not Michelle's number, so it's not her, I'm pretty sure, unless she's calling from a different number.
Okay, let's find out who's on the bat phone this morning. Hello, caller. You're through to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.
Hey, Kevin, how you guys doing, man? It's Dave from San Francisco.
Good morning, Dave. How are you today?
Man, I'm doing better for talking to you guys now. I'm so glad. You know, it's an honor, you know, being like a regular on the show, man. You know, and I just, hey, listen, I want to tell your producer, Reed, man, just, you know, Keep plugging at it, man. Don't force it. You know what I mean? Love will come. Isn't that right, Kevin? Love will come.
Yeah, absolutely. Love will come, and with it, many children, probably.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm, you know, hope that guy, you know, gets him a nice girl, and, you know, gets married and has little Hodges babies, man. That'd be great. The world would be a better place, right?
Yeah, many, many little reeds running around, blowing in the reeds. But anyway, Dave, I was thinking about you this morning because I have you heard the news about the UFOs being shot down? Hey, you were on the radio talking about UFOs, and next minute they start shooting them down. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Have I heard? It's one of the reasons I called is that, you know, say, have I heard? Listen, Nancy Pelosi was at the market again getting eggs. And she was, like, shouting on her phone. She's like, shoot the blankety-blank thing down. I said, shoot the blankety-blank thing down. Someone of the managers had to come over and said, man, you can keep it down. You're disturbing everybody. She's like, don't you know who I am? Man, don't you know who I am? Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Blinken Pelosi. And she's, so anyway, you know, the thing with the UFOs, and you know, like I said, I've been on one. You can't shoot those things down, man. You can. There was a UFO. You can't shoot those things down. Those things are built a certain way. That's why I think it was a Chinese spy balloon, man.
Is that what you think it was?
I'm telling you. Of course, man. Of course. They're listening in on us, you know. I really do think. But, yeah, man, it was just. I knew as soon as she said, she shoot the blankety-blank thing down. I was like, I know exactly what she's talking about. You know, and I told the manager, and he was like, oh, yeah. I was like, man, come on, you got to put two and two together. Aren't you watching the news, man?
Do you think this is going to affect the price of eggs?
Well, of course it is, man. There are probably some eggs in that thing.
Yeah,
I think it's going to affect. Yeah, of course it is, man. Everything's going to affect it, you know. Especially if that old Sleepy Joe runs again, man. Oh man, you think they're pricing now? You wait another couple of years, man. If that dude gets reelected, you got to take out a loan, another loan. It means you got to take out one loan now. You can take out two loans just to buy some eggs, man.
So what you're saying, if Biden gets reelected, the chickens will be coming home to roost?
Oh, absolutely, man. But start buying your chickens now. Start building like a chicken farm, if you can. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do, man.
Get you guys some
chickens over at Archangel Radio. Maybe when I come down, I'll bring you a chicken.
You do that, Dave. Anytime you want. There's the opportunity to meet everybody at Archangel, especially if you're coming from Mardi Gras. I hope you've been listening to our coverage of the run-up to Mardi Gras. There's lots happening. I mean, it's cavalcades, it's fun, it's floats, it's all sorts of good stuff down in the Mobile Fairhope area. You'd be more than welcome to come down, Dave.
You think if I dress up like an alien, you think I'll scare everybody?
Not in the parade.
What do you think, Reed? Would it be worth a try?
Not during the parade, he wouldn't scare anybody. If he just wears that normally, probably. But during the parade, I don't think anybody will be too alarmed.
Well, maybe they'll throw me something, man.
They'll ring your alien head with beads.
You never know. Yeah, I'll take some beads back with me, Yeah, I need to call my brother about that, see if I can come down there, man. That'd be great. I'd love to check that out, man. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, look, Dave, we love having your calls from San Francisco, and if you ever make it over this side, absolutely drop in and see us. But also, keep in touch. We want some well-informed opinion about these UFOs, these strange phenomena that have been shot down, and I think you've got the job as our correspondent, Dave.
Oh, hey, man. Hey, Dave reporting for duty on Archangel Radio, man. Anytime. Man, makes me feel special. You made my day.
That's great. Well, Dave, listen, you've made my day by phoning in. Thank you very much, and do phone again. That was Dave from San Francisco, a regular caller to the show and somebody who we appreciate. Now, when we come back, we're changing gears and not so much talking about unidentified flying objects as talking about the end of the Western world. You're not going to want to miss this. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. Radio. Now, just over 100 years ago, my fellow countryman, the poet W.B. Yeats, wrote a poem called The Second Coming. It's a strange, nightmarish poem telling of events both seen and unseen, and of an ominous elemental horror that is imminent, and one that slouches from its centuries-old hibernation towards Bethlehem to be born. It contains the lines, "Things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world." Now, you might think that the events of these last years, whether they be in the United States or here in the UK, appear to have been prefigured by this poem from 100 years ago. Each morning we turn on the news and things just seem to get worse, not by the day, but by the minute. The world, or should I say the Western world, seems to be falling apart. Whether it's our economic woes, our ongoing political deadlock producing a wearying sense of stagnation, or just the creeping feeling that things are indeed slowly falling apart. To top it all, we seem to be in the midst of a polarized culture war that generates more heat than light. So you could be forgiven for saying that the situation is dire. But what if I were to tell you that every crisis we face today, somewhere in history, we have faced before? And what if I were to tell you that we can surmount each of the challenges currently facing us? Well, that's the view of my next guest, Spencer Clavin. He is a scholar, a writer, a podcaster with a lifelong devotion to the great works and principles of Western civilization. After studying Greek and Latin as an undergraduate at Yale, he spent 5 years at Oxford University, earning a doctorate in ancient Greek literature. Today, he is an editor at the Claremont Institute and has written for many other outlets, including The Atlantic, The Los Angeles Times, Newsweek, The Federalist, and The Daily Wire. This month, in fact, tomorrow, unless I'm mistaken, Regnery Publishing are releasing his latest book entitled How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises. And he joins me down the line from his home in Tennessee. Spencer, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Kevin, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I was looking at your book before this interview, and it sort of intrigues me, this sort of book. But what's different from your book to others is that you have given us the five crises and then given us the way in which we can actually deal with these crises. And I wondered if you would just, because the book's only going to be released this week, could you just give us an overview to the audience of what your basic thesis is?
Absolutely. Well, that poem you quoted at the beginning by Yeats is such a wonderful poem. It's got another great line in it: the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. And I think it's easy to feel that way, like the worst people in the world are the ones with the most cultural confidence. And so I wrote this book to let the rest of us know that we're not alone. It's the radical idea that the past has something to say to the present. It's very easy to feel as if all those news cycle disasters you described are totally new. Nobody's ever faced them down before, especially with all our new technology. The digital revolution has kind of unsettled the way we relate to one another, how we think about our place in the universe. And I wanted to just point out that because we're in these new crises, we're actually facing profound fundamental questions about humanity that have been asked basically since we've been on this earth. And for that reason, there actually is wisdom from the past that can speak to us now, which means we're not alone. The five crises that I outline here are: the crisis of reality, is anything true or false, whether or not thinking makes it so? And that's based on, our problems with virtual reality, but it goes right back to the beginning of ancient philosophy, Greek philosophy with Socrates and Plato. And then there's the crisis of the body. What do we do with this flesh of ours that decays and dies? That's something that a lot of people are kind of wondering about with the transgender extremism that we're seeing, and also all this new sort of transhumanist tech. And then, this leads into bigger questions even about the meaning of the universe. Is there a meaning to the world, or is it just kind of biology all the way down? Which leads on to yet another big question: can we believe in God, in the creative God, in the world that science seems to have remade? And after answering that question in the affirmative, yes, we can and must still believe, I turn toward America and the crisis of the regime, which is maybe the most immediate one facing us and the listeners out there. What are we going to do here in America? I mean, each point I argue that the great works of the Western canon, guys like Aristotle, Plato, Thomas Aquinas, have saner and more sound answers for us as we move forward into the future than whatever is coming down from the CDC or the WEF or all our modern gurus.
You're listening to the voice of Dr. Spencer Clavin, who is a classicist and also the author of the forthcoming How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises. If it's okay, Spencer, I'd love to unpack each of those crises, really, because I was looking at them the other day and I was thinking, a lot of questions just come to mind. And if you don't mind starting in reverse order to that which is outlined in your book, because I think things in the UK are very similar to the US when it comes to politics. Mm. And there is a kind of a sense of real disillusionment. And I do think that it was there prior to the pandemic, but it was certainly accelerated by it. And it goes along the lines of something: they're all as bad as each other. They can't really affect any change. There's no point in voting for anybody. And there's a kind of switch off from any kind of idea of civil society and politics. How would you answer somebody who's listening, who's probably thinking that this morning, this Monday morning?
Sure. I mean, I would say I feel that. I have myself woken up from time to time and just thought, you know, the problems are so big and the options on the table when it comes to voting for people, the options are so bad that there's a kind of paralysis that sets in. You know, what is it possible even to, you know, make of the various options on the table politically? And what I would say is, you know, this is kind of where I end up in the book by approaching the question from the standpoint of classical political philosophy, especially Polybius, who was the, you know, great philosopher of Rome's republican rise, but also, you know, Aristotle and his Politics. There's an observation, an insight in those books, especially Aristotle's Politics, that I think is really crucial and kind of lost when we start thinking in these big terms about presidential elections and things of that nature. Aristotle says, remarkably, that building a civilization is a work of love, an act of love. And the Greek word there is philia, one of the many Greek words for love, but specifically the one that we would often translate as friendship. And Aristotle identifies a kind of politike philia, political friendship, civic love. And it has to do with all the practices and activities that don't boil down to who you're going to vote for, that are not cashed out in terms of these sweeping presidential elections or, you know, laws that rewrite the entire state or whatever. But he talks about marrying and giving in marriage, civic festivals, religious activity, community building. And this is something that, you know, over on this side of the pond, James Madison, when he was facing the question of how we were going to stick together over this vast territory. In Federalist 10, he talked about these little communities. I mean, Edmund Burke called them later on, called them little platoons. But this idea that we are engaged together in an act of civic love at the neighborly level, at the neighbor, at the level of neighbors and neighborhoods, is, I think, if we've got a chance in making our way out of this, it's that's the way to beat that sort of disaster fatigue, is to reengage with our communities in real time and space.
And I know, Spencer, you're familiar with Catholic social teaching and that kind of idea of subsidiarity and the common good. Mm-hmm. And there's an awful lot in what you're saying there, you know, is in that realm, which is, you know, local, community-based, trying to find what's good for everybody, as opposed to a political program or an ideology. It's trying to find the common good. Is that too simplistic, thinking around those terms with...
It's not. It's I think it's actually very profound. And one of the things that we learn, I think, by going back to the ancients or even just, you know, digging into the tradition more generally, is that it's the simple insights that are often the most profound and the hardest to put into practice. You know, we say, well, oh, it's too simple. But, you know, if it's so simple, why don't we actually get about doing it? And I think it's actually because these simple insights, these sort of daily grind of living that out in your community is a really crucial way of getting past these kind of giant sweeping, you know, fights that we have between capital R Republicans and capital D Democrats. You know, when you think in terms of these vast world-saving ideas, it can get very easy to abstract away from the reality of the here and now. And the simple fact is that, you know, as Catholic teaching kind of indicates on this point, that, you know, there's not necessarily going to be this broad butt brush solution to all of the individual problems we're facing. We're going to do much better if we decide these questions at the level, say, of the school board, which is something we're seeing a lot of movement on here in the States. That's where people are actually making progress, is where they're looking at not at the problems that face capital W, the world, but at the things that face us, you know, you and me in our local communities, and especially in real space time rather than the kind of abstracted world of online.
Yes, I think there's a lot in what you said there, because I'm just thinking, listening to your response there, and I'm thinking, yeah, there's nobody who doesn't care about their local environment, their local neighborhood, the local street they live on. You know, everybody's got a vested interest in that. It's when you start to work on a larger level that people can disconnect very, very quickly from whatever it is, nation state or body politic, whatever it is that they're throwing around. Which makes me think that perhaps in the United States, in your system, which is much more localized than systems in Europe sometimes, there may be greater hope, do you think, that the United States, the Republic, will sort of triumph through a return to a local agenda?
Well, that's very generous, and I'm certainly an Americanist on this. I do think that, you know, when Madison wrote that paper that I was mentioning earlier, he was wrestling with European theorists, especially the Baron de Montesquieu, who were saying, you know, the Republic, it's kind of been tried and it falls apart when it gets too big. This is what happened to ancient Rome. They expanded their territory so much and they were so successful militarily that they just weren't able to govern that much territory with Republican institutions. And Madison was arguing, you know, actually our great size and our plans to expand across this whole continent, that's an advantage. He said, extends the sphere and you make room for more different kinds of local communities. And at least as founded, ideally, that is the, you know, one of the central kind of operating systems of America, is that you're supposed to be able to form pockets of community where you do things differently than the big, you know, than the head honchos up in Washington. I definitely think there's a lot of adversity to that idea in the Capitol right now, but I also think there's a lot of hope for it. If you look at states like Florida or out here, I'm in Tennessee, that we really actually can still dig in our heels and be federalists about this.
Yeah, and I think in some ways, paradoxically, the size of the United States, the physical size, the geography of it, actually lends itself to localism, whereas smaller European countries, it's a lot easier to centralize everything in a capital and in a government system. I mean, I think here in the UK, we're one of the most centralized countries in the world, but we're also, I mean, in terms of density, we're all squeezed onto a relatively small island, so maybe it's easy to do that. Okay, well, listen, this is fascinating, Spencer. You okay to stay for the next segment?
I'd be delighted. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I'm in conversation with Dr. Spencer Clavin about the end of the world, and it's but he's got a good message for us, and I'm already feeling a lot more positive. So stay tuned here on Archangel Radio. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Now listen to this. This is where we are today. The hour is late and the war has begun. The most important battleground in the cultural war is the one most often forgotten within every human soul, within every family, within every day. There is a battle being fought over what principles, what beliefs, and what rituals will be accepted, taught, and passed on. In that fight, you are the last line of defense. This book is designed to equip you to win. Those are the words of Dr. Spencer Clavin, who is my guest this morning and who is just about to publish How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises. Spencer, welcome back. I love this sort of rallying call. I also almost felt like I was watching Laurence Olivier, you know, in Henry V, you know, we band of, but it's, you know, You are a very highly trained classicist, and you could have spent the rest of your life very happily reading the works of the ancient Greeks and Romans and ignored the mess of the world around me. But with this book, you have really gone front and center into what is essentially a cultural war happening before our eyes, and you have planted a flag. Why did you do that?
Well, to be honest with you, it's personal for me. I went into this discipline, the discipline that you mentioned of classics, not because I wanted a fancy degree, but because from a very young age, I was blessed to be surrounded by books. And what I learned very early on is that that meant being surrounded by friends. I had to discover that it wasn't normal to grow up with bookshelves all over your house necessarily. And that filled me with a sense of sadness, because in fact, you know, those books that sit up on the shelves they look like, you know, in sort of imposing objects, but between the covers are human minds and some of the greatest human minds that have ever lived and thought. And one of the beautiful things about them is, you know, the great works of the Western canon, they're not actually there to furnish material for PhD theses. They are reflections on how to be excellent at being human. And the point of my book is really that those reflections are for you and me. And, it's not that academia doesn't have its uses. It's not that I didn't love, you know, digging deep into classical history and philosophy. It's just that, you know, ultimately these sorts of things are urgently necessary for the moment. And it's easy to dismiss them. They've been maligned as sort of backward and superstitious, maybe even racist and sexist to think about, you know, all these old dead guys. But actually, as we move forward into the digital age, as our technology unsettles us in all these profound ways, the old truths become more important and not less. And I wanted people to have access to those truths the way I did growing up. And I wrote the book to give people an inroad and some ownership over that wisdom.
Sounds like you're on a mission, Spencer.
You could say that. I think so. I mean, it's been a real journey out of the ivory tower, as it were. And one of the things that I heard most often as I began to share this message and to write in more public venues, you know, there were actually two things that really stuck out to me when people would write. The first was, you know, I'm on my tractor, or I'm, you know, driving in my cop car or whatever, and I'm listening to you talk about this stuff, and I feel suddenly excited about, you know, reading Aristotle, and you know, that's very wonderful, very heartening to me. It's beautiful that people are, you know, opening this storehouse, which is really is a, you know, a treasure trove of the canon. But the other thing I heard is, you know, the beauty and the truth of these texts is so far removed from the world, from the real world.
That's right.
And the way that it looks, you know, out there, sort of as you were saying. And when you think in those terms, I think that despair starts to set in, because it's really easy to start asking yourself, well, what am I going to do to fix the country, or to roll back the, you know, hands of time, to sort of muscle the cycle of history into place? And the answer is, you know, we don't have that power. That power is not given to us. It's obviously not meant for us, but we have actually a more important job, and it's alluded to in that passage you read from the book. These traditions, the traditions of the West, the wisdom that comes down to us from Athens and Jerusalem, doesn't live, in some computer cloud in the sky. It doesn't even live primarily and only in the books on the shelf. It lives in every human heart. And the recovery of the human heart from nihilism, from relativism, from despair, that's ultimately the work of somebody like me, and it's the work of the great thinkers that have gone before us. They're there to wake us back up to the true and the beautiful, and that's actually something we can have ownership of in the here and now, and we can bring it into these crises that we're currently facing, even though it can feel a little bit daunting.
Now, it's interesting what you say there about the sense of disillusionment, which we were discussing in the last, in the political sense, but there's probably more of an existential crisis going on across the Western world as well, which is one of meaning, and you touch on that crisis of meaning in your book. And I don't know if it's me, Spencer, but when I saw your book and I started reading through it, I thought, I agree with all of this, right? Spencer's analysis of the problems, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people, I'm sure a lot of people have come to you and said, yeah, you've got it absolutely right. But there's a part of me, and I just wonder, is that, like, it was something I think Pope Francis said, where he said that we are not living through an era of change, but a change of era. And it doesn't nullify what your book is suggesting and the roots out of this malaise that we're in, but it's almost like I can't quite understand the way the world is shifting, and we are shifting, and there's a paradigm shift going on of some sort, and I'm not sure where we're heading, especially when it comes to tech, AI. You know, every single day, I mean, I was saying at the start of the program, you turn on the radio this morning and the first news is about shooting down UFOs, and I'm thinking, what is going on, right? So right. I just wonder, the tools that you're giving in the book, the basic thesis of your book, is it still relevant for a world which is starting to shape in worlds that I certainly didn't know when I was growing up?
That's a great question. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you what's going to happen tomorrow or 5 years down the line. I say in the book that, you know, it's actually not given to us to know the future. And that really does mean we don't know. You know, it's kind of good news and bad news. It's bad news because bad stuff might happen. But it's good news because our sense of impending despair isn't written in the stars either. Nothing is written in the stars until it happens. But here's what I would say about people who are, you know, facing down this change of era, which I think I agree. I think that is what we're living through. And they're thinking, well, you know, maybe it's helpless to, you know, maybe that's just a tide of history that we're just going to get swept under. We talked in the last segment about the Roman Republic. And I always, when I'm thinking about this sort of question, I think about Marcus Cicero, who lived at the very end of the Roman Republic when the empire was coming. And Cicero, in his own vision of things, the way he might have seen it, Cicero died a failure. The new regime did come, and he was one of its first casualties. And he said himself, I'm retreating into a republic of letters. If we can't have a republic, in fact, I'm going to write the, you know, philosophical underpinnings of our republic as it was. And if you only think in human terms, then that project did fail. But if you think in the longer vision of things, you fast forward to the 1770s, and enter John Adams, an old curmudgeon who has pored over the speeches of none other than Marcus Cicero. From his youth, he's been reading Cicero. And it's Adams who gets up and gives the great speech in defense of the Declaration of Independence, which sets this country on the road to its birth. And when you're thinking in that kind of timescale, when you understand yourself as part of a tradition that has survived the rise and fall of many a great nation, many even, you might say, of many a great civilization, there really isn't any room or right to despair, because the West is God's, since truth is God's. And we don't actually have the right to despair. We have a job to do, which is to wake up every day, seek the good, the true, and the beautiful insofar as it is given us to see, and leave the rest to God.
It almost sounds, Spencer, as if, and this is in your book and in that little passage I read, that the fight is worth itself, you know, that the fight to save the West, to make this world better, is in itself a noble task.
That's absolutely right. That's beautifully put. And, you know, what else are we going to do? Because really, you know, if I could prove to you, which I, you know, maintain I can't prove to you, but if I could prove to you that in a month everything is going to come crashing down around our ears, I'm not sure what we would do with that knowledge except despair. And since, in fact, that's not the case, since we're not bound to fail, the most noble and best kind of life is one devoted to the highest good as we are able to discern it, haltingly, of course, and with prayer. But this is, you know, this is the hour unto which we were born. Frodo says to Gandalf, I wish this ring had never come to me. And Gandalf says, you know, so do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. And it's not for us to decide either. And like you said, the fight is worth it in itself.
I mean, one of the few things of getting older, one of the benefits of getting older, one of the very few things, Spencer, is that you tend to have seen the wheels go round before. Do you know what I mean? For example, talk of economic crisis. Well, anybody who grew up in the 1970s with oil shortages and 6-day wars and, you know, I've been there, done it, all the rest of it. So that's probably the only thing that I would say. But there's something about the wisdom of the ancients, which you're talking about, and the wisdom of those books and the great minds that have gone before us. You touched on it, alluded to it earlier. We live in an era when cancel culture is at its height, and the idea that the past has nothing to teach us and it's the brave new world of the future. I mean, how would you sort of answer those people?
Well, you know, you talk about getting older in an individual human life and the wisdom that brings, and I think you can project that out onto the larger timescale of all of humanity. You know, when anybody falls in love for the first time, they think they're inventing all the problems. They think they're the first person ever, right, to have these issues. And, you know, in the scope of things, any human generation, no matter how old we get, we're always like that. We're always going through these problems as if it were the first time anybody ever had. And the point of opening these great books and returning to the tradition is to realize that, no, in fact, you know, there are people have gone before us. Humanity is not only one generation old. And of course, you know, the problems we face are going to be unique in their own way, just as every human life is unique in its own way. Cancel culture is very real, I think. It's one of the big threats we face, and I think it actually is related to the development of this new communications technology. Just this, when the printing press came into being, there were all sorts of efforts to control the information that could come out of it. You know, when digital technology has come into being, there have been, you know, new efforts because it's dangerous and scary, and there people have, you know, vested interests and powers that make them want to shut speech down. But the other thing that we learned from studying that history is that, you know, actually you can, there is such a thing as investing in the good, even when it feels as if, you know, there's no hope for it. The point of, yeah, reading these books is to, it's like getting wisdom from your older, your father or your grandfather, people who have been through these things before and can help point the way.
Absolutely. Spencer, am I right in thinking this book's published tomorrow?
That's absolutely right, February 14th.
Well, congratulations on such a wonderful book, but also on entering into the fray. I think it takes a brave man to pick up the task of saving the West through its ancient wisdom. But you've done it very, very well in this book, and we here on Archangel wish you all the very best with it. Spencer, tell our audience where they can find out more about you and where they can purchase a copy of How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises.
Thank you so much, Kevin. You can find me online at Spencer Klavan on Twitter, and you can get the book wherever books are sold, but there is a website, howtosavethewestbook.com, where you can find all the different platforms where the book is available for purchase.
That's wonderful. Well, Spencer, thank you very much for coming on this morning, making time just prior to the release of this book. And being an author myself, I know how time-consuming and how nervous this moment is. So here we wish you all the very best in the coming months and a great success with this book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
That was Dr. Spencer Klavan, who's the author of How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises, published tomorrow by Regnery Press. And you can go and pick up a copy at all the usual places. When we come back, we will be praying together as a family. We'll be praying the divine mercy. And this is the moment when you can text us your prayer requests. No request too small, no request too large. 251-928-2111. We'd only be too happy to pray for you today here on Archangel Radio.